Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Finding out the latest on Connecticut's nursing homes and what's changing when it comes to care and visiting your relatives. And are you 65 or over? If you are, it's time to review your Medicare plan as changes are coming to Medicare in 2021. Plus, a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. When COVID-19 hit the state, the section of our community that was hit hardest and suffered the most deaths was the senior community and those in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. It prompted the governor to order an independent review of nursing homes and care facilities across the state, and the results showed the state could and should have been better prepared to handle the situation. Trying to visit relatives at nursing and care facilities has only recently become a little easier, but still there is much to do to help this vulnerable part of our society. And I caught up recently with Dr. Deirdre Gifford, the Acting Commissioner for the Department of Public Health in Connecticut, to find out the very latest on the subject. Dr. Gifford, thanks for joining us on Connecticut East This Week.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Just tell me, Dr. Gifford, you know, where do we stand currently with nursing homes here in Connecticut, COVID-19, and obviously visitation?
Well, as you are probably aware, Brian, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid are federal partners down in Baltimore and D.C. who oversee inspection program, survey program in nursing homes. They issue guidance, actually a directive, in about a month or so ago now, that had changed the visitation and required us to liberalize in-person visitation. So we have done that in compliance with that directive, but we are also working with our nursing homes to make sure that they have the tools that they need to make sure visitation is safe, continue to encourage outdoor visitation wherever that's possible, and to make sure that visitors are appropriately screened and that the infection control processes in nursing homes are sufficient to prevent infection from being introduced into the facilities.
Phase 3 has started across the state, but as I said earlier, Eastern Connecticut is seeing quite a bit of a spike at the moment. So how does that potentially impact, you know, your desire to allow more visitation to nursing homes?
We will, and the CMS guidance directs us to restrict visitation if a nursing home is having an outbreak. So those nursing homes that are experiencing an outbreak will revert back to more restricted visitation policies. But the guidance that we have in general doesn't allow visitation to be restricted until the county reaches a 10% test positivity. None of our counties, thankfully, are at that high of a level at this point. So we're not imposing any more visitation restrictions on those facilities that are not having outbreaks right now.
With regards to visitation, you touched upon this a little bit at the top of the interview. Of course, there's been a lot of criticism about people being able to access their loved ones at nursing homes. How difficult a challenge has that been for you? Because obviously, this is unprecedented and it isn't obviously just affecting nursing homes, it's affecting everything. But people, of course, are saying, you know, these are vulnerable people, they are part of the vulnerable parts of our community. How much of a challenge has it been?
It's been a huge challenge for us and for the nursing home industry and for the families and residents of nursing homes. We have been trying to strike an appropriate balance between what we understand and appreciate is the need for people to have human connections, to see their loved ones, to be assured that they're doing okay, and the demands that we've been receiving to ensure that COVID is not reintroduced in nursing facilities. And we do know that it is introduced from the outside, whether that's by staff or contractors or by visitors. So it's been a balance since the beginning. The governor issued the very first order to restrict visitation. We've been trying to strike that appropriate balance, and we definitely understand that there are important views on both sides of this issue, and we're working together with the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman and the industry to try to continue to hit the right balance there.
I just want to briefly touch upon a report which was produced by an organization called Mathematica. The state requested that that organization create the report. They did a supplementary and then issued a final report fairly recently. What were your thoughts on the findings? I know there's a lot of detail there, but I mean, generally, it seems to be that the findings from the report suggested that the state was caught out a little bit with this, that they could have done things better. And of course, you know, one can always argue that, I suppose, with anything. But what were your thoughts on that final report?
The governor asked for this report precisely because we wanted to learn from the first wave of the pandemic here in Connecticut. Our nursing homes were severely impacted, and we want to do whatever we can to prevent that from happening if we do experience a second wave that's at all close in intensity to what we saw in the spring. So we're one of a few states that commissioned such a report. So we intend to learn from it. Mathematica, I think, did a very thorough professional job in their review. They talked to many, many people. They reviewed a lot of data. They did some new independent research. So in general, our reaction to the report was that we've begun to initiate the majority of the short-term recommendations during the intervening time between June and September when it was first commissioned and then the final report was issued. Then there were several longer-term recommendations that we are closely considering, and we're talking to our industry partners and moving forward. I think Connecticut is much better prepared now than we were back in the spring. Obviously, we didn't know about the disease itself, COVID-19. We didn't know about its behaviors. We were faced with shortages, national and international shortages of PPE and testing supplies and adequate testing. All of that is a different environment now. We are stockpiling PPE in the nursing homes and at the state level. We have adequate testing capacity. We know more about the behavior of the virus and how to prevent it from spreading. That being said, as you mentioned, Brian, we are seeing outbreaks in a couple of nursing homes now. So we are doubling down on our infection prevention strategies, meeting with the facilities, and making sure that they are carrying through on all of the guidance that we've issued.
I just want to quickly pick up with you as well, Dr. Gifford, about the Three Rivers Nursing Home, which just about over a month ago was actually shut down by the state of Connecticut. Can you just give us an update with regards to, you know, the people that were there, what's happened to them? And like I said, we've also seen a situation fairly recently with another nursing home that sadly has had some COVID issues in Colchester.
At the Three Rivers Nursing Home, we did issue an order for mandatory discharge of all of those residents, and they have all been discharged. Some of them were moved to one of our COVID recovery facilities, those residents that had an active COVID infection, and those are specialized facilities that we developed over the course of the past several months to accommodate residents with a COVID in a specialized environment. So some of them were moved there. The rest we worked with our acting manager and the long-term care ombudsman and the residents and families to place those residents in other facilities of their choice.
Seen a situation fairly recently with a nursing home in Colchester. Are any extra steps being taken by the state with regards to that nursing home?
Yes, when we see an outbreak in a nursing facility, there are a couple things that we do. One is we have sort of two arms of DPH that get involved. One is our healthcare acquired infections unit that's led by a physician epidemiologist. And she and her team work with the facility to make sure that they understand all of the infection control steps that they need to be taking. Principally among them, Brian, is this concept of cohorting, which is testing all of the residents and then grouping them together so that those with an infection are not grouped with those who don't have an infection, so that the staff can work primarily or exclusively in one or the other of those cohorts. And that's a recommendation, a best practice that comes from CDC. So our group works with the facility to make sure that they know how to do the cohorting, that they're doing it appropriately, and also that they know about the testing strategies, the PPE strategies, et cetera. The other thing we do, the other branch of DPH that gets involved, is our facilities licensure and inspection group. And they're the regulatory arm of DPH. So they will go out and do inspections. And if they find violations, like we did at Three Rivers, then they will issue citations or other notices along with our partners, our federal partners. And there can be potential fines and corrective actions that the facility needs.
The Mathematica report found that nursing homes and long care facilities that had higher amounts of staff had fewer cases of COVID-19. But this industry had federal law brought in many years ago because it didn't have a particularly good reputation, and that federal law was brought in to try and change that. Do you feel that even now, despite all of the changes that have happened in the past, that this industry still needs a lot more oversight?
I think that it's important to strike a balance between oversight and assistance. I mentioned the two different arms that we have at DPH that assist. One is a quality improvement approach, and one is a regulatory approach. And I think you need both. The federal government has, for example, a contract with a regional entity called the Quality Improvement Organization. And their job is to go out and work with nursing homes and make sure that they understand best practices and all of the things that they can and should be doing to make sure the quality of care is as good as it can be. So I think you need an approach that is both support and information and quality improvement, as well as an approach that focuses on regulations. The third part, the third leg of that stool, I guess I would say, wearing my hat as the Department of Social Services Commissioner, is that the payment strategies for Medicare and Medicaid really need to align and incentivize quality of care. So right now, the Department of Social Services is working on a new payment strategy that we'll be implementing over the next 12 to 18 months that will begin to change the way we pay nursing homes and emphasize and incentivize some of the quality outcomes that we'd all like to see in these facilities.
Dr. Deirdre Gifford, Acting Commissioner of the Department of Public Health, ever so many thanks for giving us an update on the situation with regards to nursing homes here in Connecticut.
You're welcome, Brian. Thank you for having me.
If you're 65 this year, you will be eligible for Medicare, the federally run healthcare system. If you're already a recipient of Medicare, then you know that each year you need to review your plan to make sure it's still working for you. In 2021, there will be major changes coming to Medicare, and I spoke with Laura Cruz, Director of Benefits Access at Senior Resources Agency on Aging, to find out about the changes. Laura, as always, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
Medicare changes each year, and we are now in the open enrollment period. Give us an idea, if you would, of some of the highlight changes for next year.
Sure. And, you know, there's been a couple really great changes. Let me first start off by saying about the Part D senior savings model. This is really interesting for those who take insulin as part of the way to manage their diabetes. So the insulin savings program is meant to lower your insulin costs to no more than $35 for a 30-day supply on certain insulin medications that you take. Couple things that I want you to keep in mind, though, is in order to sign up for one of these plans, you will need to do it during the Medicare open enrollment period, which begins October 15th and ends December 7th. And it's also important to know that While there's 27 standalone prescription drug plans available in Connecticut, not all participate in the senior savings model. Unfortunately, only about 9 of them participate. One thing that I do want you to keep in mind, though, too, is even though you may take insulin, and it's wonderful that this Part D senior savings model is now operational and ready to go as of January 1st, you still need to keep in mind all your other medications you take. You may find that you're still spending more in medications if you sign up for one of these senior savings models just for your insulin costs. So you really want to take in the full, I hate to say it, but the kind of take a peek at all of the 27 different prescription drug plans that are out there to help determine where you want to go with your prescription drug costs. So of course, we at Choices, which we'll talk a little bit about that later, is here to help you. And as far as the Medicare Advantage plans is, you do have certain Medicare Advantage plans with drug coverage that are participating in the Part D senior savings model as well. So in New London County, while there's 30 different Medicare Advantage plans with drug coverage, there's only 6 of them that participate in the Part D senior savings model. Some other great things coming with Medicare is those that have been diagnosed with end-stage renal disease, which is kidney failure, more than likely requiring a kidney replacement, is prior to you can never enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan with drug coverage that offers additional benefits that original Medicare could not cover. Last year in 2020, Medicare did open it up for specific Medicare Advantage plans made just for individuals with end-stage renal disease. But as of January 2021, it has opened up the door for all Medicare beneficiaries who have end-stage renal disease to sign up for basically any of the Medicare Advantage plans that are out there.
Now, another interesting thing about some changes for next year is acupuncture is now in an alternative treatment, obviously, to, you know, using painkillers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So prior to, acupuncture was never covered by Medicare. Basically, most chiropractic care was never covered by Medicare. But as we move on, slowly things are added into the Medicare program. But it's good news for those who suffer chronic low back pain. Medicare will cover now up to 12 visits in a 90-day period for individuals diagnosed with chronic low back pain if the back pain has lasted for more than 12 weeks and have no known cause, like you didn't have an injury or metastasized cancer, and your pain's not associated with, say, a former surgery you might have had, or if you're pregnant. The bad part is if the provider decides that the acupuncture is not working at all, it's not making it better, or in fact, your issues are worsening, then Medicare is going to cease to cover any more acupuncture treatments.
Okay, at least it's an option, like you said, which wasn't there.
It's a start. That's right.
Now, another big thing, obviously, that, you know, come to fruition this year because of COVID-19 is telehealth. I mean, it was around beforehand, but obviously COVID-19 restricting people's movements. Telehealth has become a very big issue. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So telehealth is a great way to actually see your provider and talk to your provider about your symptoms and what you may be facing, but it's done through the privacy of your own home via a computer rather than taking the chance going out in public and going to the doctor's office. So Medicare will allow you to consult with your healthcare provider using real-time interactive audio and video technology. It does need to be obviously HIPAA compliant, so the software that your provider's using do want to assure you that your information is protected as you're speaking about your own personal health issues via the computer. So while it has been around, just like you said, obviously 2020 and going into 2021, telehealth will be used, I would say, more widely than it was before.
Now, of course, we've seen this year, again, because of COVID-19, lots of deadlines for various things ranging from sort of like the census to, you know, paying your taxes. You know, we've seen to like deadlines being moved just to help people out. Open enrollment, something that happens every year. Are the dates changing for that or is that staying the same?
So open enrollment is happening just as normal. It begins October 15th and it's going to end December 7th. So at this time, I encourage everyone who's enrolled in Medicare Parts A and B, you want to keep your current coverage or you may want to change plans. Just like I was saying, is those that are insulin dependent need to receive insulin. This is a good time to really take a peek at what's available. In addition, is you want want to pay attention to mailings that are coming into your home, especially from the plan you are currently enrolled into, because you want to find the document called the Annual Notice of Change. This is a very important document to read and understand, because it's going to explain the changes that your current drug plan will be undertaking. And that could be simple things like the premium increase or decrease. Unfortunately, from what I'm seeing with all 27 plans, there seems to be premium increases, which is normal. But hey, every once in a while, you may see that small decrease. But it will also explain to you the changes in your copays, like what you may pay for certain covered drugs. And of course, the all importance of the formulary. And the formulary is simply a list of prescription drugs that your plan is willing to cover and help pay for. And again, Choices Program, we're very happy to help you with this information by simply screening you.
Talk us through the Choices Program a little bit more for us, because it was something you mentioned at the top of this interview, and it is important. And of course, the other thing is, I understand it's free as well.
Oh, absolutely. So the Choices Program is the state of Connecticut's State Health Insurance Assistance Program. The government loves acronyms, so it's known by SHIP. And it's available in every part of the United States and even United States territories. So if you're a Medicare beneficiary and you just don't know where to turn to, contacting your local SHIP agency is a great idea. So in Connecticut, our SHIP agency is named Choices, and we provide free unbiased information on all Medicare-related information, including the Medicare prescription drug plans or Medicare Advantage plans. We utilize what's called the Medicare Plan Finder tool to help screen out the plans that will best suit you financially and cover all your prescriptions at a price that hopefully you're able to assist with. Now, when we do these screenings through the Medicare.gov Plan Finder tool, we're going to ask you certain questions like, what is the list of your prescriptions? We need the correct spelling, the dosage, how many times per day you take it. But we're also going to ask about your pharmacy choice, because just by selecting different pharmacies, you may find hundreds of dollars of savings if you switch from, say, one pharmacy to another. And what's great about the Medicare Plan Finder tool is you can add up to 5 different pharmacies, and the Medicare Plan Finder tool is going to break out what your costs, or approximate costs, I should say, can be, simply by switching to a different pharmacy. And one of the biggest mistakes we find individuals do each and every year is, one, stick with the same plan they've had over and over again, or stick with the same pharmacy over and over again without realizing just by a simple change, you may end up saving hundreds of dollars for the year. So what we normally tell people is, you know what, take the 1 hour out of this 7-week period to meet with us, to talk with us. We can go over your options for you. And if you decide to make a change, at least you have the information you need to make that change, to perhaps just simply save some money throughout the entire year.
One thing I suppose to make a point about when you're talking about your pharmacy as well is, of course, some people live in areas where they may be restricted as to what pharmacies are in their area, and possibly they could be sort of like not that mobile either. And as much as it is great to save money, of course, you know, you may not get the service though, possibly from another pharmacy that you're getting from, you know, a pharmacy you've been with as well. So I suppose it's a lot of things just to take into consideration, not just maybe necessarily that you're going to save yourself a few dollars. Is, you know, are you going to get the service that you need as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and individuals can reach out to us at any point throughout the year. We're just not here during open enrollment. We do these types of screenings. We talk about Medicare throughout 365 days out of the year. We are always talking about Medicare. And you can reach us by calling the Choices Program, their statewide phone number, toll-free number at 1-800-994-9422. But if you live in the New London, Middlesex, Windham counties, you can reach us directly by calling Senior Resources Agency on Aging at 860-887-3561.
Laura Cruz, Director of Benefits Access for Senior Resources Agency on Aging, based in Norwich. As always, thank you for talking us through the complex situation that is Medicare, and obviously highlighting those important changes for next year. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And don't forget, you can find out all about Medicare at the official government website, which is simply medicare.gov.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. And in the Connecticut Examiner this week, Jim Markow, president of Mystic Oysters in Noank, joined Representative Joe Courtney and Governor Lamont and various state officials at a press conference to announce that after months of political pressure by Courtney and state's congressional delegation, hard-hit shellfish, clam, kelp, and seaweed growers are now eligible to receive $1.8 million in aid from a USDA program, a change that could open the door to including aquaculture in the 2022 federal farm bill. In the day this week, the findings of an independent investigation have criticized Stonington police for their initial handling of the alleged assault of a black female clerk by a white couple at the Quality Inn in Mystic on June 26th this year, but finds no evidence to suggest any malicious intent on the part of the police in not locating the suspects on the day of the assault. Attorney Frank Rudowitz, who was hired to review the incident and issue a report, wrote that the police department's attempt to lure the male suspect, Philip Sarna, back to the hotel and arrest him for allegedly beating Crystal Caldwell failed because Sarna tricked Stonington police. Police have been criticized because Sarna and Emily Orbe were able to leave Lawrence and Memorial Hospital in New London, where they were treated after the 11 a.m. incident, return to the hotel and flee to New York in their car without being apprehended by police. In the Norwich Bulletin this week, a Norwich Volunteer Fire Department will get a little eye in the sky assistance thanks to the donation of an aerial drone that officials said will aid in local fire suppression operations across the city. Representatives of the National Public Safety Drone Donation Program, NPSDDP, a non-profit group founded by Mark Langley, owner of the Hebron-based Airborne Works, delivered the unmanned drone to the East Great Plain Volunteer Fire Department recently. The department applied to the NPSDDP in November 2018 for the device, which they expect will help incident commanders make more informed decisions at large-scale fire scenes, as well as the tough-to-reach brush fires where smoke-choked terrain makes it difficult to see a fire's path. Since 2019, NPSDDP has donated drones to 21 police and fire departments, as well as search and rescue units from Alaska to Florida. In the Middletown Press this week, the State Department of Public Health has awarded Portland a $250,000 grant to identify alternate sources of drinking water, something the town has sought to do for some time. First Select Woman Susan S. Bransfield was notified of the grant in a telephone call from Laurie Matthew, the Public Health Section Chief of DPH's Drinking Water Section. Having access to safe, clean, potable water is extremely important, she said. The town has a well and also buys 146 million gallons of water annually from the Metropolitan District Commission, which comes at a substantial cost. The town has a 30-year contract with the Regional Water Authority, which is due to expire in the latter part of this decade. And in the Chronicle this week, two prominent women basketball coaches at the University of Connecticut will benefit from the school being investigated by federal officials for pay discrimination. In response to an investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor into pay discrimination allegations, UConn will pay a total of almost $250,000 to seven employees, including UConn Women's Basketball Associate Head Coach Chris Daly and UConn Women Basketball's Assistant Head Coach Shea Ralph. And in next week's Connecticut East This Week, we'll be talking more about direct and indirect remuneration fees that pharmacies have to pay to pharmacy benefit managers and how a new national campaign is highlighting the issue and why you, the consumer, are affected by the practice. Plus, we talk with the Wyndham Region No Freeze Project about their warming center opening on 1st of November and how COVID-19 has affected how many people they will be able to serve. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow, and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.